Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, April 18th, 2019. We'll start with a story that is titled Looking for Work, Hundreds Attend DACC Job Fair. This is written by Carol Roem in Danville. More than 70 area employers eagerly met with job seekers Wednesday morning at Danville Area Community College's 24th Annual Career Connections Job Fair. Nick Catlett, coordinator of Career and Veteran Services at DACC, said he was pleased with the attendance, both by employers and job seekers, at the career fair that took place inside the Mary Miller Gym. "We had 71 employers and about 300 job seekers," he said. About halfway through the fair, Kelly McBride, Career Services Specialist, said the turnout was pretty good. "We had a lot more visitors during the second half of the job fair," she said. I know of one woman who has two interviews set up and another guy who has three interviews and 12 applications out." This was Catlett's first time organizing the job fair, and he already has ideas on what to improve for next year. Four computers were set up outside the gym so attendees could apply for jobs online before they left the fair. We brought four computers, but we've made a note to bring eight next year," Catlett said. The 71 employers at this year's job fair represented the fields of manufacturing, healthcare, engineering, accounting, radio media, case management, customer service, electrical apprenticeships, education, forklift operating, law enforcement, machining, mechanics, sales, trucking, warehousing, and welding. "There was a little bit of something for everyone," Catlett said. Emmanuel Boston said the timing of the job fair was perfect for him since he just moved to Danville from Springfield and needed a job. He already had visited McLean Midwest, Flexengate, Lowe's, and ThyssenKrupp and learned more about those area employers. "There are a lot of employment opportunities here," he remarked. "I found a couple I like that I'm going to go home and apply for." Jeremy Brown, a human resources generalist at KIK Custom Products, said the company in Hegler has 80 to 85 positions that it is looking to fill. "I've gotten a lot of resumes and handed out a lot of business cards," he said. Chad Zachman of Danville left a resume with Flexengate with the hope of landing a quality engineering position. Zachman said he has been a quality engineer for the last 15 years after a career in law enforcement and emergency medical services. He said he would like to continue in the manufacturing field despite suffering a layoff in 2009 from the automotive industry. Amy Jo Furborn of East Central Illinois Community Action Agency said the downtown Danville agency has a broad variety of jobs available, from customer service to educators. "We have paper applications they can fill out, or we tell them to go to Indeed.com to apply," she said. Rebrisha Holmes, who moved to Danville about 4 or 5 months ago from Wisconsin, was enthusiastic about the job prospects at the Community Action Agency. "The job I would love to find is working with people," she said. "Customer service is my thing." Mike Dell, operations manager at Bodine Electric in Danville, explained to the young men drawn to his table what exactly Bodine's does. "We're not electricians, we build electric motors," he said. Joseph Uppenauer said that kind of hands-on work is something he would be interested in. He also said he was looking at jobs involving forklift driving, welding, and carpentry. Clayton Hanna of Danville and Evan Green of Georgetown also met with Dell. Green said he was interested in going into a trade. "I'm looking at all the opportunities," Hanna said. The job fair also coincided with annual State University Transfer Day. For the 10th year in a row, representatives from several Illinois universities were on hand at the job fair to discuss university transfer options. The opportunity to meet with university representatives was open to everyone but was aimed at DACC students who eventually would transfer to a four-year university. Next story is titled Council Approves Moving Grant Funds, and this is written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. City Council members Tuesday night approved moving Community Development Block grant funds from East Main Street Public Infrastructure Improvements to General Economic Infrastructure infrastructure, economic development, and public improvement and infrastructure activities. Ward 3 Alderwoman Sherry Pickering and Ward 4 Alderman Mike O'Kane said they want to see the city try to use the money on a city's east end. O'Kane said more development is needed near the busy Danville Area Community College and Veterans Affairs Ileana healthcare system. We need something across the street, he said, about the having the visitors and students spend money in the city. Alderman didn't approve moving the CDBG funds elsewhere in November. The funds for the East Main Street area were for additional land acquisition and demolitions. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said the city has acquired most of what it can already along East Main Street. The city has been unsuccessful in acquiring some properties such as the American Inn Motel for further park areas and other development. The City Council approved amending the CDBG Annual Action Plan for program year of 2016 to be in compliance with timely spending of funds as required by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. The amendment reduces the amount dedicated to the East Main Street public infrastructure improvements from $259,035 to $38,807, increases economic development from $75,000 to $135,000, and creates the new activity public improvements and infrastructure with $160,227, possibly for the Griffin Street CSX improvements. In other business Tuesday, council members approved a $551,769 contract with DMS Contracting Incorporated for the city's 2019 Seal Coat program. They also approved a $22,254 contract with Schomburg and Schomburg Construction for wayfinding signage, foundations, and structural steel. They authorized an intergovernmental agreement with Danville Schools District 118 concerning demolitions and who pays for what when the city and school district agree to demolition. They also authorized Danville Mass Transit to file applications with the Federal Transit Administration for federal transit assistance. They also authorized actuarially services with Lauterbach and Amen for $13,950 the first year, $10,550 the second year, $14,500 the third year, and $10,960 the fourth year, starting with the next fiscal year. There's an increase every year due to reporting requirements. They also approved budget amendments concerning the fire truck loan, $64,000 in the settlement with Pierce Manufacturing for two fire truck rail replacement, transferring $150,000 to capital improvements from solid waste in exchange for reallocation of the 2013 John Deere wheel loader from the streets to solid waste division, and $57,907 paid to Miller Tree Service for tree removal with the Denmark Old Ottawa Road project being completed. They also authorized Old National Bank as the depository for payments made by credit card to the city, such as for yard waste stickers and other fees. City Comptroller Shelley Scott said the city could start taking payments online, possibly starting next year. They also authorized application and acceptance of local discretion grant from Norfolk Southern and amending the police division budget by $5,000 for the grant's purpose of replacing Kevlar helmets for the emergency response unit. According to the resolution, the helmets are beyond their life of offering adequate protection. The ERU is a tactical unit that serves the Danville Police Department, local narcotics unit known as VMEG, and other agencies in the service of high-risk warrants. They also appointed Alderman Sharon McFadden as chairman and Steve Foster and Don Duchesne to the Credentials Committee to review the April 2nd election results and that those elected meet requirements. They also heard Williams say Illinois Department of Natural Resources officials were here this week to evaluate the Riverfront Trail proposal. They heard from Holiday Hills resident Ruby Swinford on behalf of the Neighborhood Association, asking about two sites that need to be cleaned up of trash and other debris between Valley View Apartments and Southmore Drive and on Eastview Avenue going towards Voorhees Street. They also heard Danville Community Development Director David Schnell say the city was checking on a leak at Garfield Park swimming pool. They heard Ward 5 Alderman Mike Purr ask about Aqua Illinois Solar Project, if certain zoning was needed, and if there would be a public meeting, and about semi-tractor trailers parked in driveways. And they also heard from Ward 3 Alderman R.J. Davis saying a family approached him about issues with memorials at some locations becoming unsightly due to the rain, such as with wet stuffed animals and items such as bottles being left. This is something we may have to deal with, he said, saying he didn't want to sound insensitive. Next story is titled Hoopston Council OKs Contract, and this is written by Carol Hicks in Hoopston. City Council members on Tuesday unanimously approved the engineering contract for the topographic survey with Donahue and Associates for $21,000 plus $3,000 for the MET Geotechnology. The contract for the gravity, sewer, and water main extension on Illinois Routes 1 and 9 is the first step toward the design phase for the Route 1 and 9 truck stop project. Once the survey is done, according to engineer Tracy Fullen, the design phase will be completed, and in about 60 days, the project can go up for bids. Council members also approved unanimously the change to the Liquor Ordinance 5.20.050 Section N, allowing a member of the council to obtain a liquor license for a steakhouse if requested. After reviewing the ordinance with City Attorney Chuck Mockby and Mockby with the Illinois Municipal League Attorney Patrick Hayes, Alderman Alex Humes said that Hoopston's ordinance was a deterrent to any business owner that wanted to be involved in the city leadership if that owner sold liquor in their business. I was surprised, said Humes, to learn how strict our ordinance actually is. Humes also added the ordinance said in summary that no city official can hold a liquor license or even be associated with a business that has one. The change would allow other current or new business owners of good character and reputation in the community, as stated in Section B of the ordinance, to participate in future city leadership positions as long as he or she is not a law-enforcing public official, a mayor, a village board president, or a president of a county board. The ordinance goes on to state that to prevent a conflict of interest, that official could not participate in decisions made in regards to alcohol. In other business, Aldermen approved unanimously the 2019 budget. The $3,800,359 budget had expenses of $3,800,351, leaving a balance of $8 by the end of fiscal year 2019-20 budget. Perpetual care bids were opened April 15th for Floral Hill Cemetery. Alderman Chad Yadden said only one bid was received. Treasured Roots Flower Shop was approved unanimously with a bid of $4,500 for planting live plants in 127 urns and $4,000 for the filling of non-fading silk flowers in 64 urns, including three small vases and non-fading artificial flowers. The street corner solicitation registration was approved 5-1 for the Ira Owen Krager American Legion Auxiliary Post 384. The Legion Auxiliary plans a Poppy Days fundraiser from 8 to noon on May 18th. The corners of Route 1 and 9, North Market and East Penn, and North Market and East Main will be covered by fundraisers. Volunteers. Yaden was the lone no vote. Resident Josh Clifton asked why the council had not put the house at 401 North Market Street on the agenda to tear down. It was a public nuisance, he said, and according to the ordinance, if it was not livable after a fire, it was supposed to be demolished in 90 days. The house burned on December 21st, 2017. Humes agreed with Clifton the situation had gone on too long. He said that research is being done and he should have an answer by the next council meeting whether the city can clean up the property without owning it. The next Hoopson council meeting will begin at 7 p.m. on May 7th in City Hall at 301 West Main Street. Okay, now we'll run through the obituaries. Isla Hosshauer, 94, of Danville, passed away on Tuesday, April 16th at Pleasant Meadows in Chrisman. Visitation will be from 11 to noon on Friday, April 19th at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home at 10 East William Street in Danville. Service will be at noon at the funeral home with Pastor Newman officiating. Burial will follow at Johnson Cemetery. Larry A. Hughes, Sr., 67, of Danville, passed away on Tuesday, April 16th at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of Larry's life will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, April 20th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermillion Street in Danville. A visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. at the funeral home prior to the service. He will be laid to rest at Sunset Memorial Park. Memorial donations may be made in his honor to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Charles W. Chuck Beck, 62, of Georgetown, passed away at 11:17 a.m. Tuesday, April 16th at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of Chuck's life will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 19th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center of Georgetown at 200 East West Street with Pastor Troy Horn and Pastor Gary Ferris officiating. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday, April 20th at the funeral home. He will be laid to rest at in Georgetown Cemetery. Memorial donations may be given to his in his name to Georgetown Church of the Nazarene. Martin I. Jones, 92, of Danville, passed away at 8:08 p.m. on April 15th at Garden View Manor. A graveside committal will be at 10 a.m. Thursday, April 18th in Sunset Memorial Park with Robbie Ketcherside officiating. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville at 3940 North Vermillion Street is assisting the family in arrangements. Memorials in Martin's memory to the Danville Humane Society, American Cancer Society, or the American Legion Post 210. Richard Lee Ziegler, 69, of Yeddo, Indiana area, passed away at 12:47 a.m. EDT time on Monday, April 15th in the Lafayette Franciscan Hospital. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 EDT time Thursday, April 18th in Shelby Funeral Home of Covington. Funeral services are at 2 p.m. EDT time Friday in the funeral home with Pastor Lauren Stevens officiating. Burial will follow in Centennial Cemetery near Yeddo with military graveside rites by the Petersburg American Legion and the U.S. Air Force. Carol Katie Myers, 80, of New Richmond, Indiana, passed away at 4:06 a.m. on April 13th, 2019. I'm sorry, her family and friends will celebrate her life with a visitation from 5 to 7 p.m. EDT time on Friday, April 19th, at Friends and Family Funeral Home of Wingate, Indiana. Katie's celebration service will be at 11 a.m. EDT time Saturday, April 20th, at the funeral home with Pastor Alan Sparks officiating. Graveside services will follow in Georgetown Cemetery at noon CDT. The family asks in lieu of flowers, consider a donation in her name to a ministry important to her through the gate in Linden, Indiana. Michael McGovert, 35, a resident of Manitowoc, Wisconsin, passed away Saturday, April 13th, 2019. Memorial services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 20th, at the Harrigan Parkside Funeral Home. Relatives and friends may call at the Harrigan Parkside Funeral Home from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday. Cremation has taken place at the Harrigan Parkside Crematory and Chapel. James Kenneth Kenny Womble, 74, of Danville, passed away Friday, April 12th, at his home. Private family services will be at a later date. Gary Dean Barnett, 58, of Vetersburg, Indiana, passed away at 12:38 a.m. April 12th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Per his wishes, he will be cremated and there will be no services at this time. Robeson Chapel in Catlin, Illinois, is in charge of the arrangements. Sandra Jean Hevener, 79, of Hoopston, died at 8:08 a.m. Tuesday, April 16th, at home. Cremation rites will be accorded and no services will be held. Anderson Funeral Home in Hoopston is in charge of the arrangements. Elizabeth Ann Beth Lee, 45, of Danville, formerly of Florida, died at 6:20 p.m. Monday, April 8th, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Cremation rites will be accorded and no service will be held. Anderson Funeral Home in Hoopston is in charge of the arrangements. And William Wright, Sr. of Danville, died Friday, April 12th. Funeral services for the Army veteran will be at 11 a.m. Saturday at Trinity Lutheran Church at 824 East Main Street in Danville. Pastor Kent Tibben will officiate. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville with military rites accorded by American Legion Post 210. Visitation will be from 3 to 6 p.m. at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville, and from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Okay, the next story is titled Murder Trial. Judge appoints attorney for witness, and this is written by Noelle McGee in Danville. On the second full day of Glenn Torres' murder trial, special prosecutors called the defendant's uncle to testify about detailing the car in which Torres allegedly shot to death Theodore Teddy Hill and Zara Strickland about 3 years and 7.5 months ago. But about 15 minutes into Assistant State's Attorney General Mary Claire Nicholson's direct examination of David Mott, the special prosecutor asked for a sidebar. After a few minutes, Vermilion County Circuit Court Judge Nancy Fahey called for a short recess and sent the jury back to the jury room while court personnel tried to track down the attorney with the public defender's office. This was at 5:15 p.m. when most courthouse personnel had gone home for the day. Earlier in the day, the prosecution and defense teams and jury agreed to go until 6 p.m. Wednesday. 6 p.m. Wednesday and today so that they could dismiss early on Good Friday. About 5:30 p.m. while the jury was still in the jury room, Fahey appointed criminal defense attorney Michael O'Brien to represent Mott temporarily, telling the witness that O'Brien was there to speak to him about the statements that he gave under oath and his testimony going forward. Torres, 30, of Indianapolis, faces 8 counts of first-degree murder in the August 2015 fatal shooting of Hill, 29, and his fiancée Strickland, 28. If convicted, the former Danville man could face 60 years to life in prison under the special penalty provisions. The trial resumes at 9 a.m. today and is expected to go into next week. Much of Wednesday's proceedings involved Leon Parker, who, along with Dan Brown, is representing Torres, cross-examining prosecutors' key witness Marquise Robinson. Robinson, a self-described low-level drug dealer, testified Tuesday that on August 1, 2015, Joshua J. Robinson, his dealer, put a hit out on Terlando Givens and his associate, Mr. Hill, after Givens robbed him and shot him in the leg the day before. He also testified that late that night and into the next morning, he was driving Torres, who claimed Robinson paid to take out the two men, Mr. Hill and Mrs. Strickland, to Torres's car when Torres shot Mr. Hill in the back of the head, ordered him at gunpoint to drive to a location west of Danville where he dumped the couple's bodies, then ordered him to drive him to his home on the east side of Indianapolis. Also on Tuesday, construction worker Martin Hollis said that about 7 a.m. on August 4, 2015, he discovered the bodies of a man and woman near a tree line north of the house at 322 Western Avenue, west of Danville, when he arrived to do some work on the property. Car-related testimony. Mott, one of the three other prosecution witnesses who testified Wednesday, said that in August of 2015, He lived at 110 Pine Street in Danville and worked as a car detailer. Under questioning by Nicholson, Mott recalled detailing a blue Chevy Malibu for Robison on August 2nd, 2015, saying that Robison and his girlfriend at the time, Jalen Ayers, dropped it off and Robison paid him $50 and a rock, which he explained was crack cocaine. Matt said Robison had not brought cleaning supplies, so the two of them went to Big Lots where they got carpet shampoo, a scrub brush, and air freshener. When Robinson complained of an odor in the car, Mott said he looked inside. It was like a funny smell. I didn't really pay no attention. At the time I was doing drugs, he said, adding Robinson told him to clean the carpet and the seats and focus mainly on the passenger side of the vehicle. Mott said that when he wiped the front seat, I saw blood, but didn't question Robinson about it. He said his brother-in-law cleaned the back seat area of the car. When Nicholson asked Mott when he cleaned the car next, Mott said a couple days later, he was called to Robinson's apartment. He said, Dave, I need you to clean between the seats real good. The stuff is still there, I said. What stuff? He said. Don't you smell it? The second time. I did a full detail because he said he smelled it. Mott said that he was cleaning, he noticed bullet hole on this passenger side door, and that he remembers Ayers trying to remove the bullet because she wanted to keep it. He said that after he was finished, Robinson said took him inside his home, gave him money and drugs, the same amount as the last time, and then showed him three or four guns. Under further questioning, Mott questioned speaking to Mott acknowledged speaking to police Danville Public Safety Building at the Danville Public Safety Building on October 27, 2015, after he was arrested for retail theft. When Nicholson asked him if he saw his nephew in jail, Torres had been arrested a few days earlier and talked to him about the murders. Mott said no. Robinson started to ask Mott about testifying before the grand jury that indicted Torres, but then she asked for the sidebar, believing that Mott's testimony hadn't been truthful. During his testimony, Robinson made several statements that contradicted Mott's, including that he didn't pay Mott for the work, that Ayers wasn't around when Mott cleaned the car the second time. Also on Wednesday, Special Agent Greg Carey testified he analyzed records for a cell phone upon the request of Vermilion County Sheriff's Investigator Sean Jones earlier. Earlier, a Sprint records custodian testified the number belonged to Robison. Based on the analysis of the calls and cellular towers they used, Katie said he was able to track the phone from Danville to Indianapolis and back to Danville between 12:57 a.m. and 12:35 p.m. on August 2nd, 2015. Run through a couple community briefs real quick. In Danville, the library lists programs Build Marvelous Creations with Legos at the Builders Club at 10:30 a.m. Saturday in the Danville Public Library's Children's Program Room for children ages 5 to 11, children under 8 with a caregiver. Also 10 a.m. to noon Saturday in the second floor conference room, the DPL Writers Group brings together aspiring and accomplished writers. Participants should bring a few pages of work to read with the group for adults 18 and older. And in Georgetown, kindergarten signups. Georgetown Ridge Farm is rounding up kindergartners who will be 5 years old before September 1st, 2019 for the 2019-2020 school year. Roundup will be during school hours April 23rd through the 26th at Pinecrest Elementary School. Parents can call 217-662-6981 or come to the school to schedule a time to bring in their student for testing. Parents should bring their child's current physical immunization records and a certified birth certificate. Kindergarten screening will be from April 29th to May 3rd. Parents will complete any additional paperwork while waiting. For information, call 662-6981. So that'll be it for today, Thursday, April 18th, 2019. Looks like it's going to be a nice and rainy day today, so try to stay dry. Hope you all have a good week and see you again next week. Take care. Bye.